ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय न वर्तितव्यम् तद् अधर्म बन्धो धर्मेण सत्येन च वर्तितव्ये ब्रह्मावर्ते यत्र यजन्ति यज्ञेश्वरम् यज्ञाः न वर्तितव्यम् धर्मबन्धो धर्मेण सत्येन च वर्तितव्ये ब्रह्मन् वर्ते यत्र यजन्ति यज्ञे यज्ञेश्वरम् यज्ञविधान विज्ञाः न वर्तितव्यम् धर्मबन्धो धर्मेण सत्येन च वर्तितव्ये ब्रह्मन् वर्ते यत्र यजन्ति यज्ञे यज्ञेश्वरम् यज्ञविधान विज्ञाः न वर्तितव्यम् धर्मबन्धो धर्मेण सत्येन च वर्तितव्ये ब्रह्मन् वर्ते यत्र यजन्ति यज्ञे यज्ञेश्वरम् यज्ञविधान विज्ञाः Not Vartitavyam, deserve to remain. Tat, therefore, adharma, irreligiosity. Bandha, friend, dharmena, with religion. Satyena, with truth. Cha, also, Vartitavye, being situated in. Brahma Avarte, place where sacrifice is performed. Yatra, where? Yajanti, duly perform. Yajyaihi, by sacrifices or devotional services. Yajna Ishvaram, unto the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead. Yajna, sacrifice. Vitana, spreading. Vigya, experts. Translation. Therefore, O friend of irreligion, you do not deserve to remain in a place where experts perform sacrifices according to truth and religious principles for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Yageshwara, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the beneficiary of all kinds of sacrificial ceremonies. Such sacrificial ceremonies are prescribed differently in the scriptures for different ages. In other words, sacrifice means to accept the supremacy of the Lord and thereby perform acts by which the Lord may be satisfied in all respects. The atheists do not believe in the existence of God, and they do not perform any sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord. Any place or country where the supremacy of the Lord is accepted and thus sacrifice is performed is called Brahmavarta. There are different countries in different parts of the world, and each and every country may have different types of sacrifice to please the Supreme Lord. But the central point in pleasing Him is ascertained in the Bhagavatam, and it is truthfulness. The basic principle of religion is truthfulness, and the ultimate goal of all religions is to satisfy the Lord. In this age of Kali, the greatest common formula of sacrifice is the Samkirtan Yajna. That is the opinion of the experts who know how to propagate the process of Yajna. Lord Chaitanya preached this method of Yajna, and it is understood from him that this verse, that the sacrificial method of Samkirtan Yajna may be performed anywhere and everywhere in order to drive away the personality of Kali and save human society from falling prey to the influence of the age. So this is a very essential point in the devotional process, is that this understanding of what is sacrifice and what is truth. If this is misunderstood, devotional service actually can be destroyed. The material world is dead matter, and the Lord shapes it into different forms, because actually material energy isn't all the forms that we see. Material energy is pradhan. It's just a kichari of all the elements mixed together at the same time. So the Lord separates this and makes it into the shapes that we know in this world. And He also then creates within it, He puts His potencies so that they mimic that of the spiritual realm. A tree here mimics that of a tree in the spiritual world. You know, water here mimics that of what's in the spiritual world. So in other words, we get a concept, a general kind of concept of what's going on there. But it's actually illusory, because it's not actually water, it's not actually a tree, it's not actually a dog, it's not actually that. It's dead matter that's been empowered with the Lord's energy so that we can fulfill our so-called desires separate from God. Does that make some sense? So it exists means it is material energy, and it is in that form of a tree, but it's not actually a tree. It's not a real tree. Right? Does that make sense? Just like when the tree is reflected in the water, you see a tree there, so that reflection is a real reflection. Does that make sense? It's real as a reflection, but as a tree, it's an illusion. Does that make sense? Right? Because the material world is referred to as it exists, and also that it doesn't exist. Right? So it exists in that all the shapes and forms that we see, and the activities that we see, exist, but the illusion is that we think that they're real and that they're actually something of substance. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So, this is the problem. That therefore, sacrifice and truth, if not actually seen in connection with the Supreme Lord, is also illusion. Right? It's also illusion. And because we're conditioned, we have a tendency to think that truth and sacrifice is as we perceive it. Does that make sense? Truth meaning fact is right, or it's morally correct. That's truth. But according to Bhagavatam, truth has nothing to do with that. Absolutely nothing. Right? If this voice can be understood, one can progress very nicely in devotional service. Without understanding this point, you will get stagnated in the neophyte position for millions of lifetimes. If you think truth is morality, and you think truth is facts and figures, and you think truth is actually making the material energy function nicely, then you're destined to stay here in the material world a long time. Because devotional service is something completely different. It has nothing to do with anything that your conditioned nature knows anything about. Does this make some sense? I hope you don't mind the stark presentation, but it's been said before, but I don't see it being practiced. So, truth is that what has been established by the Lord, that is in connection with Him, means in connection with the transcendental realm. That's truth. That's sacrifice. Everything else is illusion. Right? The material body we have, the subtle body we have, is material energy. It's an illusion. What we have, we identify with it, that's called conditioned nature. And we're devotees. So we can identify so much with the illusion. Right? Why can't we misidentify with mundane concept of truth and morality? Right? Means these things are given in the pages of Bhagavatam for the devotees. It's understood the karmis can never understand it because they think what they see here is real. Right? Only the devotee can understand this, so therefore it's pointed out to the devotee. Does that make sense? So, if it's not connected with the Lord, it's not real. No one should fool themselves. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, if the result of an activity does not please the Supreme Lord, even if it's according to all morality and all truth as seen in the material platform, which is up to date, contemporary, politically correct, it's Maya, it's illusion. Right? This is a very significant point that is being brought out here in the first canto of Bhagavatam, right? Because the main discussion of Bhagavatam will start with the second canto. So the first canto is to establish the right understanding and mentality to hear Bhagavatam, right? In other words, Bhagavatam is a discussion between Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami. To hear that, you must be qualified, like the great sages. So then these points are being made. You have to be able to make the distinction between transcendence and material. Right? That makes sense. Now, a question may come up, but devotees are moral, they are truthful, they are upstanding, they do everything right. And that's, yes. That's because they do it, because the Lord gave it, and because it will please the Lord. Material morality without the Lord is an illusion. It doesn't exist. Right? As we pointed it out, it is cheating that you're in the material world. It is immoral. It is sinful. It is not truth. This place is illusion. We're servants of God. We're supposed to be in the spiritual world. In other words, the material, mundane morality is like honesty amongst thieves, and no better than that. The most upstanding, moral mundaner is just a nice thief with other thieves. That's all. They have no better standing than that. Of course, our sentiments from, you know, previous, you know, our, what do you call it, liberal sentiments may feel pained at this, but that's the reality. Right? This is the reality. The material world is a bunch of cheaters and cheated, who some of them are within their circle cheat a little less. Maybe with their family or their community or their country, or maybe even the human beings, though they eat everybody else. Right? So where is this truth? It's not there. Truth means this connection to the Lord. Also look at it. Where does the concept not to steal, to be truthful, where does it come from? Did it come from the modern liberalist? Did he make it up? No. You find the modern liberalist, even though he talks that this is what he's doing, he's busy breaking it down. Right? What previously in the 60s would have been banned as a movie now is fit for a 12-year-old. Right? You know? And what you would call adult previously was called pornography. This is the result of liberalism. So-called truth, freedom of speech. Does this make sense? So no one should be under the illusion that their previous liberal background is anything glorious. Right? It is more sinful and destructive than very conservative people who are not very liberal. Does this make sense? Sorry if we are hurting anybody's sentiments, but since truth is the discussion on the floor, then hey, we're going to use the modern technique. You know, just speak it. Be straightforward. The knife cuts both ways. So, if we look at it, it doesn't come from the liberalist. It comes more from the conservative. Where did the conservative get it? From religion? It's coming down from, you know, basic Christianity, Judaism, as we know it. Right? Islam, Buddhism, these are new things in the Western world. So it's coming from religion anyway. And who gave the religion? God. So in other words, it's because God has said it, it has meaning. It has nothing to do with because some nowadays is politically correct. Political correctness is the sure and easy way, unless you're using it for Krishna, to go to hell. Right? Very easy. Things that Prabhupada in his purports speaks against. Political correctness propagates. So know it. If it goes against Krishna and the acharyas and the scriptures, it doesn't have any standing. No one should fool themselves. 1,000 fools get together and say an untruth is right. It's still 1,000 fools, and what they've established has nothing to do with reality. So it doesn't matter how many people say it's good, it's still wrong. Right. Is this clear? So, first point we made is if we're talking truth and morality, that being in the material world is already not truth and not moral. Right? But, putting that aside, then in here, material world, God has given truth and morality in the form of the scriptures, his teachings. So following that, then the material world becomes engaged in the Lord's service. It has some meaning. Right? It has a way out. Then, now, next step is, does morality stand on its own? Right? Morality is economic development. Right? One should know it. Political correctness, morality, justice, this is all economics. It's money. It's gain, right? A person wants to make money. Can you do it if there's no justice? Can you do it if people aren't moral? You can only have business if there's a little bit of truth, right? You take the product, and you go to the counter and you pay after. You have possession of the product, you haven't paid. But there's a concept that there's enough truth that you will go to the counter and pay. Right? There are some places, you know, in various, you know, places in the world where the business people won't function by that. They have a gate at the door. You cannot go in the store. You tell them what they want. They tell you how much it costs. You put the money on the counter. They take the money, go and get your product and give you the product. Because the people will go in, take it, steal it, run away. It's like that. There are places, there are shops like that all over the world that function like that. Because truth has become so less. Right? So, therefore, morality and the truthfulness, justice is very important if economics is your need. Right? Unless, of course, you're just talking the Shastra says this, therefore. Then it's more of an academic. But if it's practical, if your need for justice is practical, know it to be economics, gain. Right? And the justice will create the safety. Does this make sense? So, what does Bhagavatam say about artha? Right? Artha comes from dharma. You perform dharma, you will automatically get artha. Right? Does that make some sense? Therefore, the focus is on dharma, not on artha. Because artha, separate from dharma, doesn't have any standing. It doesn't exist. It's an illusion. Anyone thinks they can establish morality and justice without the Vedic principles is in illusion. Because it's produced from that. It's like saying, I will get children without a mother. Right? Or I will get a sabji without cutting it and putting it in a pot and cooking it. Does that make sense? Or I'll have money without having a job. Right?
Without
charity. Yeah, but I'm just saying is that means you have an activity that gives a result. Charity, of course, is the result of that. But point was saying is that, and this is supposedly the thought of intelligent people. So this is what's Maya steals the intelligence, the focus. Is that we think we're going to get truth and morality without religion. It can't happen. It doesn't exist. It's an illusion. It sounds great. That's the fun thing, is things sound great. We like them because they sound good. But it doesn't mean it's real. It just sounds good. Okay? Now, the point we're trying to get here, just like in social dealings, what would you call exploitation? Right? What's the difference between intimate interaction between a man and a woman and rape? Right? The activity is the same. Right? The difference is there is because the sensuality is not based on emotion. Right? Not based on relationship. Does that make sense? Therefore, it's exploitation. Does that make sense? So, the lower, if it's not based on the higher, then it is lower. That's why it's called lower. Economics and sense gratification, not based on religious principles, is a lower element. Does this make sense? I hope it's not too subtle, because if it's too subtle, then you'll go out of this classroom saying that I'm against morality, and, you know, we're just saying that the devotees are heading down the wrong path. So we want to avoid this, because these are techniques that are given in the last six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. So they're useful, they're important. What we're trying to point out is morality without religion doesn't exist. Morality that's based on religion, that's real. Because religion is to please the Supreme Lord. Does this make sense? This is the point we're trying to make. Everything before this was just leading up to this. Does that make sense? Sacrifice means acknowledging the Lord and performing activities that are satisfying to the Lord. That's called religion. Right? So in that, we have to cooperate with other living entities. Therefore, morality comes into question. Right? That comes into the picture. Right? As an individual, you're going to perform your sacrifice. But you have to interact with others. Right? So interact with others, there must be rules. And there must be a common set of values. So this will bring into the picture morality. Does that make sense? So morality that's extended from religion, that has reality to it because it is connected to the Lord. But morality that's not connected to religion does not exist. It's simply economics. Right? We have to remember the term political correctness. The first word in that phrase is political. Right? It just means it's politics. Politics are for economics. Right? So in other words, if I say a word that's now politically incorrect, I will get a bad result because everyone will go, ooh, that's not cool. Right? So economically, I won't progress. I won't get the favor of the people. Therefore, I won't get the position or the facility or the money or whatever. You understand? That's what political correctness is for. Right? It's a bona fide part of human interaction. Right? Now they use this euphemism called political correctness. Before it was called diplomacy. Right? But diplomacy now is politically incorrect to use, though that's the actual term. Right? You know, it's just semantics by people who don't actually know the standards. Right? Because a word has a meaning and it has its application. Right? So when people are too sentimental without a Krishna conscious foundation, then political correctness is the term you'd use. If you have a foundation in the scriptures and in actually how human society works, diplomacy is a perfectly fine word. Right? Because you know what goes on in society. The other one tries to cover that it doesn't exist. Oh, people aren't diplomatic. Oh, that's very harsh. So we use political correctness. And that sounds very good. Right? Does that make sense? So that's all. So what we're trying to do here is we're just trying to present that whatever value and whatever need is there in your life, if it's connected to Krishna through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, it has meaning. And if it's not, it will not give you the result, even on the material platform, that you're looking for. Because the Western method is not based on religion, therefore it will not give you a prosperous result. Does that make sense? It may appear so, but you're only burning up your previous piety that you had from previous lifetimes where you were pious. No one should be under illusion that their political correctness today is actually getting them anywhere. As diplomacy, it may be getting you somewhere. Because diplomacy has been given by God. But as a modern technique, that it actually has value from the modern platform of political correctness as a contemporary value, that's an illusion. And no one, no matter who they are, should actually oppose this point. Because they would not be able to give any foundation from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Just be real, be truthful, according to the modern, that you're an illusion. Right? So that's the whole point. Is that What is book? So that's what's being get. That's why we have Dharma and Bhumi in this conversation, right? We could have Kali in so many other ways. We could be dealing with Kali Yuga in so many different ways. But we're dealing with it here, right? And how does the bull deal with this? He deals it, well, it's very hard to say who is the cause of my problems, right? You could easily say, hey, this guy here, this black guy here dressed up in this kingly outfit is over here whacking me on the legs. But he's just the instrument. Actually, it's one's previous karma that has arranged that this person is there giving you the trouble. Does that make some sense? So that is the point that's being given, is going back. And then where have these rules come from? They've come from God. So Bhumi's point is after the departure of God, now I'm getting trouble because irreligious people are managing the planet not according to Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra. Right? This is 5,000 years ago, not 2005. This is 5,000 years ago. Right? Another point. Modern simply means where one doesn't follow the scriptures. No one should think that they have a special position because they're modern. Modern's always been there. There's always been tribals on the planet who have been modern. Always. Right? You go to Papua New Guinea, they're just as modern now as they were, 10,000 years ago. No difference, right? They still say the same mantras, have the same spears, have the same rituals. They're modern, right? So there's always been modern man, but sometimes he may look at various forms and that, but whatever. So just nowadays, the Westerner thinks he's the modern man, but he's another modern man. There's tons of modern men. You go to Africa, South America, you go all over. There's a lot of modern men, and they've been like that for a long time, right? Australia, they've been pretty modern for a while, right? Ayers Rock, still people go to it today, go there and see it, pay money, right? It's a modern attraction. Well, they've been attracted to it for, as long as they can remember, the Abos, so. And I'm saying, so this concept that we have a somehow divine right on modernism. So the point is that this modern doesn't satisfy anyone, hasn't satisfied. If you think about it, as a community, we are not necessarily become more and more satisfied, we become more and more modern. Right? Right? Does that make some sense? So here the essence is being given, because the Bhagavatam doesn't want you to make the mistake that the Vedic form is also the answer. Does this make sense? That's the natural pendulum swing. No, here, in other words, as Prabhupada is saying, sacrifice means to accept the supremacy of the Lord and thereby perform acts by which the Lord may be satisfied in all respects. That is Krishna consciousness. Right? So Yukta Vairagya means you can use the Vedic in Krishna service or the modern in Krishna service. Right? That's Yukta Vairagya. But it has to be that the Lord is being pleased by it in all respects. You recognize the Lord and you're pleasing the Lord. That is Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So that's the point. That's why Bhagavatam is special. Mahabharata, you'll get the thing, if you simply follow the Vedic rules and regulations, then you've perfected your life. But Narad Muni points out to Vyasadeva, no, you follow the Vedic, that's nice, it's pious, it's great, you'll have a nice interaction, plenty of money, nice emotional exchanges and all that, but you're still going to stay in the material world. So you haven't pointed out clearly how to get out of the material world by serving and pleasing the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is making that point. So all the points that are there in the Mahabharata are brought out, especially in the first canto. Right? First canto is like Mahabharata. like taking the essence of Marbarak, showing that it's the Lord that makes it worthwhile. This is the point. Does this make some sense? I hope nobody goes out of here and misrepresents what we say. So that's what we're trying to say. We're not saying modern's useless. We're not saying you have to be Vedic. We're saying what pleases the Supreme Lord, right? That is what's important. Okay? Is that clear? Yes.
Diploma is when someone has learned something, has acquired some knowledge and wants to abide by the knowledge. Diplomacy means someone has some knowledge and wants to abide by that. Politics is like two poles already. They maybe disagree with the knowledge of diplomacy. So they will, like you said, they will go for the artha. What is the result? They will go for that, even if brush off all knowledge from diplomacy. So in Krishna consciousness also, what you were saying, modern, and these principles of bhakti, they have been given long time ago. But sometimes we want to make them modern, to adapt ourselves. Can we change? Disagree with Vedic principles of bhakti to just to make it more modern so we can fit in?
Can we disagree with the Vedic principles of devotion? So that we can fit in.
Make it more easy.
Okay. So one of the things is there is in this point, then there would be many aspects of misunderstanding. One is principle never has to change. Right? Like you take water, it's wet. It doesn't matter where in the world you are, what tap it comes out of. You know, you go to the richest man's house, the water that comes out of his tap is just as wet as the water that comes out of the poor man's house, or like in Calcutta, that comes out of the gutter in the street, it's still just as wet, right? You know, so you can't change that. So this is a misnomer on the part of devotees. We're only mentioning devotees, others yes, but because this is discussions for devotees, is that they can't tell the difference between a principle and a detail. Principle can never change. That's the meaning of principle. It always works. Detail may change according to time, place, and circumstance. So one understands the Vedic principles, they will always work, because the Vedic principles are how the material energy works. Not otherwise. You look at all these self-help books, these modern books, and books on, you know, how families work and how men and women think, and that you find the more and more study they do, the more and more it starts to look like the Vedic. That's because the principles of the Vedic are how this place works. It's not how the Westerners think it is. It's the way it works. Right? That's just God's created it like that. So that's one misnomer. So that means you can apply the principles always without giving up your principles. Second, to fit in, this idea, what does it mean, fit in? A priest in the West wears this big black, non-fitting, baggy shirt, right? With a funny little white collar. Does that fit in or not? What is the definition of fitting in? Everybody accepts this is a priest and this is how they dressed. Right? If a Buddhist walks through the airport in his funny maroon outfit that comes halfway between his knees and his feet, you know, with his shaved head, and his little bag, and he doesn't wear any watches or anything like that. He only keeps a clock in his bag. Does he fit in or not? He's been accepted by the society. This is what a Buddhist monk looks like. Yes, he fits in. He's part of the cosmopolitan, new world order. Somehow or another, a Hare Krishna in their outfit doesn't fit in. According to whose definition? The devotees, not the karmis. The karmis think Hare Krishnas have bald heads and wear bed sheets and they go down the street singing. And they're a perfect part of the community. In fact, many communities in the world, which are up to date, you could not say that, if you want to say modern, you couldn't get more modern than New York City on Manhattan Island. Right? You'd have to work really hard to disprove that point. They're asking, where are you guys? We don't see you anymore. So, what is this definition of fitting in? We should rephrase fitting in to mean this. It'll take a few words, because fit in is a nice little short phrase. But we should find a new definition that means, fitting in means how I feel comfortable according to my conditioned nature in the lifestyle I grew up in before I was a devotee, and that I develop my value system in, so I don't want to disturb those people in the aspects of the modern community that I would feel some community with if I was not a devotee. I wouldn't want to disturb them. That's fitting in. And I challenge anyone to defeat that point. That's exactly what fitting in means. Therefore, you go house to house and each devotee fits in. They look completely different from the other. Right? That's all. So, therefore, fitting in simply means I want to be who I am and have nothing to do necessarily with Krishna. So, it's just, that's my only consideration. It's just what my mind, due to my conditioned nature, likes. That's me. So, you know, hey, you know, accept it. That's fine. We don't mind that. But don't try to cover it with some so-called devotional achintabheda-bheda tattva or yukta-vairagya. That's cheating. That's nonsense. Just say, I'm more comfortable wearing these clothes and eating this food and living in my house this way because that's the way I grew up. Right? Yeah. Whatever, congregation, whatever. But I'm just saying, yeah. But I'm just saying is, we should just say is, that's how I like to, I'm comfortable like that. So, hey, you know, what's the problem? Then everybody can go, okay, I can live with that. But if we try to make it philosophical because our false ego is so big that we can't accept that I'm in Maya or partially in Maya and therefore I want to justify it, that's wrong. That's wrong. It's just wrong. But because of false ego, previously devotees who get in Maya, they just go away. You know? But now they've been in Krishna consciousness long enough, they see there's nothing out there, or they're too old. I remember two devotees sitting once, senior men saying, hey, even if we wanted to bloop, we're too old, what would we do? You know, they were kind of laughing about it. We couldn't go out there and go for it, you know. Well, you know, it's just, you know, hey, we're finished, we gotta stay here, you know. You know, we've worked too hard, you know. I mean, it's like, how long? You've been here 30 years and you've gotten into these positions and that, you know, yeah, you've got to start all over outside at 50. Come on, you'll be 80 years old and you'll be the CEO, right? You know, so they were just laughing about it. We can't go anywhere. Krishna's tricked us, you know, like that, you know. So the point is this false ego, therefore a devotee doesn't want to be wrong. And that's actually what we're dealing with, is the modern Western false ego that I can't admit that maybe it's not standard, but this is where I'm at, so okay. Previously, it was like that. People, it just worked. And so, therefore, if you're comfortable with who you are, everybody else will be comfortable. Because you're not comfortable, then you have to try to change the whole rest of the world. When they're comfortable with you, then you'll be comfortable with yourself. Very difficult method. So the modern method is extremely impractical, though they pride themselves in pragmatism. Right? I want to be satisfied. The easiest thing is change my mentality, right? Then what do I care? But no, I will change the whole world so that I feel comfortable. Yeah, and of course, yeah, we maintain our ego in the sense. Because the other one takes humility, tolerance, respect for others, not expecting respect for ourselves. You know, these kind of, what do you call it, archaic things that Lord Chaitanya would talk about, you know. So, this, it's a difficulty. So, the point is fitting in simply means that you do whatever you want to do, fine. But connected to Krishna, that's the essential point. Whether you're living a Vedic lifestyle or modern lifestyle, is it connected to Krishna? I have generally yet to see it on either account. Those who are Vedic, it's nice, but there's no connection to Krishna. It's nice in that it's connected to Shastra, but they don't connect that necessarily to Krishna. Right? So you get the smartest there. And they're very pukka, and Prabhupada would respect them for following the scripture. At least they're Brahmins, they're dwijas, they're following. That's nice, but they've missed the point. Nice guys that completely missed the point. And then the other one, in Niyamagraha, then they throw it out because they don't understand it, which means, and they pride themselves in being intelligent, right? Modern, intelligent, dynamic, but they can't understand it. That means not so intelligent, right? According to, at least as far as I understood how they taught me in school what intelligent meant. You know, the word, maybe intelligent has a new semantical meaning nowadays that I'm out of touch with. You know, so it's not very intelligent. And they throw it out because they don't understand it, don't try to understand it, just as different than how their mommy taught them, so therefore they're not interested. You know? So then, what to do?
So what about the levels that normally, after Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas, we go through the Guru's house, Guru, to learn. And they will come out and feed it in certain positions. Even in Thailand or places like that, still everybody becomes, at least for a while, a Buddhist monk. Uh-huh. You can stay in the ashram, remain, so otherwise they feed in. They go whatever they learn, they just serve them to upgrade themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
This will be like a, something new.
Yeah, this
people enter the Krishna consciousness door, it comes out.
Comes out.
Other ones stay in.
Well, education is the main thing of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada put a lot of emphasis on that. That's what this verse is. One is, but the central point is pleasing him is ascertained in the Bhagavatam. Okay, the basic principle is truthfulness. Truth, Krishna is truthfulness. He is truthfulness. Satyam hi mahi. Right? I meditate on him who is truth. So, in other words, education and the Sankirtan Yajna, this is the real thing of Krishna consciousness. So the form of it, that means it's just like this. In the early, in the 60s, people joined. There were a few persons, a handful, you could count them basically on one hand, who actually had finished education and had a job, right? I think the three, you know, the Mott Street Boys, Satsaru, Brahmananda,
I agree.
I think that was it. Right? The rest of them were, you know, dropouts or still going to school or, you know, something, you know, you could take a putty knife and scrape them off the gutter of the street. You know, something like that, you know? And so Prabhupada got them. So sophistication was not really developed because previously education meant that you were improved as a person. Right? You learned language, you learned history, you learned poetics, you learned science, you learned religion so that your mind would be improved and therefore you would be a better member of the community. There would be a common foundation of values and you would fit in. That was fitting in. So you fit into a common set of values. You can't fit in where there's no common set of values. That was changed in the early 1900s so that people would fit into working in an office or at a factory. Right, rather than fitting into the community. So they were plugged rather than into the community, which was more based, then they were plugged into an economic base. Right. So instead of taking from culture into economics, so it was dropped more from the religious platform down to the economic platform. So that's basically the modern concept. So therefore, economics being the common principle, that is common. You'll find anyone, anywhere in the modern society is looking for money, either by having a job or going out and taking it from those who do have.
Everybody should have a shot.
Yeah, everybody has an equal shot at sense gratification. You know, having things and sense gratification. That's the common denominator. That's where you fit in. It's not a social thing. It's an economic thing. Social is those who are improved in their personalities and character. So the Bhagavatam is pointing out is that one has to develop the devotional character. And the Samkirtan Yajna is the best of all yajnas. Right? It's the most powerful. So if the Samkirtan Yajna is going on, even the secondary aspects of yajna, connecting the various elements of your conditioned nature to Krishna, you know, in your day-to-day life, if that is not perfectly connected, that will be overpowered by the power of the Samkirtan, if the preaching is that is there. So, therefore, you saw that's the main thing. The devotees just studied the Bhagavatam and Gita and all that, and went out on Hare Nam and took prasad. So chanting, dancing, taking prasadam. As time went, as they became more mature, more sophisticated, therefore you have to address that by engaging it. Right? The point is whatever your nature, engage in the Lord's service. Someone's more sophisticated, you have to have a more sophisticated method, you know, system to engage it. But what happens is, niyamagraha, is we get distracted by the perfection of the material service and forget why we're doing the service. Does that make some sense? So the devotees, with time and maturity, have become quite sophisticated. They're quite mature, quite able, skilled. So many, you know, good qualities have come up. But one can get distracted. It's simply, it's the service being perfected in its mundane sense, that I'm doing it right. The management's right. It's truthful, it's moral, it's economically viable, it's, you know, managerially correct. It's, you know, all this, that's perfection. No. That means now you're engaging your nature nicely and fully, but the nature still has to be connected to Krishna. It's a simple thing. That's the point. Prabhupada says you don't have to change anything, just change the consciousness. The consciousness has changed. So that's our point in this class, is we shouldn't get caught up in the externals. It's the proper performance of duties. Now, we don't want to say it's not the form of it, because we don't want this to be mistaken that this is some Protestant presentation. No, the form is important because it matches the mood. Right? Just like if you're not very hungry, the food you would prepare would be something light and probably small in quantity. You know, you'd call it a snack. Right? Well, if you're very hungry, then you would make a meal. Right? Or if you're hungry, but it's in the morning, you make a breakfast. Right? If you're hungry at lunch or in the evening, you know, in the noon or the night, you call it lunch or dinner. You know what I'm saying? So, the whole point is it matches the thing. So, if in the mentality you're looking for the purity, this, that, you will find that method that best complements that. So depending on the situation, it may be a modern detail or it may be a Vedic detail. But the principle being Krishna conscious from the Bhagavatam, from the Vedic literature, that can't be changed because that's how the world works. You know? Does that make some sense? So that's the point. Yukta Vairagya doesn't change the principle. That's a mistake devotees commonly make. Prabhupada followed Yukta Vairagya, but he maintained his principles. If you give up your principles, that means it's not Yukta Vairagya. Right? Yukta Vairagya means engaging it in Vairagya, in Krishna's service. So Yukta Vairagya. Vairagya means it's a detachment. I'm engaging this in detachment to Krishna. Yeah, so but if we're involved in it too much, then it may not be the best quality of Yukta Vairagya. It may be Yukta, but where's the Vairagya? And Yukta to what? Yukta to Krishna, or Yukta to just my, what I like, my economics, my conditioned nature, my something, my values. So, therefore the meaning has to be understood. That's the beauty of Sanskrit. It doesn't change with time. Right? The meaning of the words are the same. They may have a variety of meaning, but they don't change. You can't change them. Does that make some sense? Okay, so then... We should end here, otherwise it's getting late. Devotees need to go do different things. But if anyone wants to stay for any questions afterwards, we can go for another like half hour and then stop. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Vrindavan ki. Because diplomacy is niti. The question diplomacy, you know, you're saying on diploma based on education, that's niti. So niti means how does the human psychology work so that you know how to talk with someone, interact with someone that you will not disturb them, and what the situation should get, you will get. Niti. Niti Shastra. Like that. Niti Shastra is where all your morality is. You know? But in that, it's not just moral, be good, be nice. It tells the situation how, in what situation you can be good, be nice. Just like the first point that it gives in the Niti Shastra, it always opens. The first verses are always establishing what is a fool and how not to deal with them. I think one of the Niti Shastra gives 17 kinds of fools and how don't bother with what's in. Murka Shatakam. I think that's 100 types of fools or 100 verses. Okay, 100 ways to identify a fool. Murka Shatakam. So, therefore, identifying a fool is very important in the Vedic concept of morality, because a fool you can have no discussion with anyway. You can't.
Association, I get.
Yeah, and then I become foolish. So, the Vedic concept is it should be very practical, it should work. So, therefore, I should be able to interact with others so they are pleased, and whatever result the situation warrants should be gained. Right? Does that make sense? Like, so just like the mother wants to feed the child. Child doesn't want to eat. Okay, now the mother could get frustrated, start yelling and screaming and, you know, slamming doors, throwing things around, and then, you know, harass the husband when he comes home and the other kids and, you know, kick the dog. You can do all that. And it would give vent to her frustration, her anger, but this would not be morality. Because the kid didn't eat, the husband, you know, is upset, the older children are upset, the dog's annoyed, you know, the hinges on the door have been compromised, you know, and, you know, like that, and, you know, like that, and, you know, does that make some sense? So it's not morality. See, the Western is, it's so, religion and morality have been synthesized into the Ten Commandments. Don't steal, don't lie, don't take your neighbor's donkey, don't take his wife, you know, like that. You know, that's basically what it comes down to. Don't swear. And that's it, and that's all you need to do. But morality is bigger than that. That's why people have to write all these books in psychology, because psychology is niti. The mother then, by using different tactics of niti, she gets the child to eat. Right? So it also could be called diplomacy. Right?
Yes.
Right? You know, she's telling, oh, you're so intelligent, you're this and that. That's not her point. Her point is you should eat. You know? So many different things are there. So there's techniques are there. Does that make sense? So like that is the whole system. So how to make it work? If it works on the platform of the senses, right? Means you take the rasgulla, you put it in your mouth. That's the appropriate application of sense gratification. You know? That's why the parents and adults get annoyed when the kid plays with it or picks it up and smears it all over themselves and throws it at someone else, and because it's the improper application of sense gratification. It's not according to how it functions. So same way is if gain is there, the proper application, that will be your justice, your morality, your niti, your morality, your economics. Improper, then will cause all these other disturbances. On the social platform for emotional interaction between individuals and the society at large, that's called religion. Right? Because then you're actually accepting and acknowledging the actual nature of each individual within the system. Right? The tree is an individual. Right? They like their bark. They like their leaves. Right? They like their roots. They like water. Right? They like sun. So you acknowledge all that. Then you're respecting the individual who is there in the form of a tree, and you're interacting with them as a tree. So we have arms and legs, we can arrange for them to get water. We have hands, we don't have to pull their leaves off. We don't have to, you know, carve our name with a little heart on their bark. You know, we don't. So all these things we don't have to do. So that's the religious, because that's the nature of the tree, and that's our nature. Right? So that nature, the ultimate nature, though that's the tree's nature, but the ultimate is there's a soul in that tree and the soul's relationship with God. So the proper understanding of religion is a connection with Sanatan Dharma. So your Vedic and the Sanatan, that combined, it works for the conditioned soul. Right? If you just take the Vedic, maybe you'll become pious if you can do it. If you just take the Sanatan, that's okay as long as you fully apply it. But the tendency will be is morning program and my japa and prasad, and, you know, that's it. And the rest of it I don't see in connection with Sanatana Dharma. Right?
It's a big problem, because from an culture or society, we enter into Sanatana Dharma first.
Yeah.
And then we disregard all the other
Vedic rules
of meeting and form.
Mm-hmm. Means it's not wrong that of the two, better the Sanatana Dharma than the Vedic, but better both, right? Of the two, nothing is the worst. Better than that is just the Vedic. Better than that is just the Sanatana Dharma. But best is both.
The problem is that the Vaishnava who has Sanatana Dharma is already like the cream of the Vedic.
Yeah.
Sometimes we think we are Vaishnavas and we are very roughly.
Roughly.
Thinking of, like we said, pretending to be something that we still didn't reach there.
Yeah.
So how to, you know, see them? Because in the teachings of the Sanatana, there's so much Vedic also. And we have to take part of it.
Yeah.
The cultural part of interaction with people, with ladies, with gentlemen, with cows, with trees, like you were saying, with carvings that we call them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's all. The point is everything's contained within the Sanatana Dharma if we apply it. That's the point. Whether we're eating with a fork and a knife and spoon, or we're eating with our fingers, are we remembering that this prasadam is Krishna? That's the point. Right? Fighting over you should eat with your fingers or we should eat with a fork, that's not the point. The point is it's Krishna. That's the real point. Now in that, then we see that since it is Krishna, then naturally it's more intimate if you use your hands than you use a fork. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So therefore, these are the kind of things. But it comes from the Western concept of less messy is more sophisticated. That's my point, is if you apply Sanatana Dharma fully, then everything will be proper. Yeah, the point is it's Krishna. It's Krishna's energy. It's Krishna's rule. You know, like that. It's
instead of cutting with a knife, with a fork.
Yeah, it means it's there. If it needs to be, you can, because you'll use something there. Prabhupada would use a spoon for liquids and stuff like that. And so if it's there, it can be used, because the point is it just depends upon how you're thinking. So it's not wrong to use, but it's not that it's the right thing. You know, some will profess that, no, we should just use the modern things because people will think we're weird and this and that. But the Buddhists eat with their hands, and people accept the Buddhists. You know? So what's the problem? So the point is if there's a situation where you're out in public, it would be inappropriate to use your hands, use the fork knife. What's the big deal? Why make a philosophy out of it for a situation that happens occasionally? When we're sitting in the temple, when we're sitting in our home, you know, like that, what's the need? But if we're out in a public situation where it would be improper, yes. You know, but even we're doing that, then know the system. Just like, how many, okay, you're using a fork. Okay, that's nice. What happens if you're eating asparagus? Do you use the fork or do you use your fingers? Right? Now, probably the common person would use their fork because it's improper to touch things with their fingers. But according to the tradition and in all the etiquette books in the West, you eat asparagus with your fingers. You know what I'm saying? So you eat toast with your fingers, eat other things with your fingers, eat a sandwich with your fingers. You know, you eat, you know, so many things with your fingers. Corn, you eat with your fingers. You know, it's just, it's okay. So the point is even the Western culinary science has its form. So if you're going to do it properly in situations that warrant it. And if you're not in it, why bother? We have our own culture. Our point is in a cultured way, dignified way, you honor prasad. That's the principle. Like that. So even eating with your hands and eating wrong, so it drops all over you and you're eating with your mouth open and making noise, is still wrong. They're getting the spiritual benefit, of course, from honoring the prasad. But still, there is a culture. There is, you still, other people have to be considered. So even though we're saying consider the individual, we don't actually consider the community. Right? You can sacrifice an individual for the community, not the community for an individual. Right? So one member of the community is acting improperly, and then, oh, but you know, they're a devotee, and they are coming to the temple sometime, though they're coming half-dressed, and they spend their whole time in the temple just bothering people, but they are a devotee, they are coming to the temple. That's the modern approach, but it destroys the cultural fabric. Well, the Vedic is, because they are, if they came to the temple alone, no one else there, come how you like, what do we care? Then it's between you and the deity. But if you're coming and disturbing other people, therefore, then if it's against the scriptures, then it should be changed. If it's according to the scriptures, then the community should adjust. You know, unless it's something the community is too neophyte to adjust and the other person's senior, then he may adjust. Because he knows just, you know, they won't understand it. So the whole thing, so the problem with the modern is they don't consider the community. For the free speech of a few people, they destroy the community. For the free freedom of activity, they destroy the community. Therefore, Prabhupada said, demon crazy. It's a demoniac culture that has no God consciousness. It's the secularized version of Protestantism, which means do your own thing. Protestant means do your own thing in connection with God, and then when you secularize it, it's do your own thing in connection with economics and sense gratification. So it's demoniac. You want to engage a demoniac culture and activities in Krishna's service, okay, if the situation warrants it. But why would you want to prefer a demoniac application over a sattvic application if there was no need otherwise? You know what I'm saying?
Economic is not just someone who has a business or Economics, no. Anybody who's working for getting his own gain.
That's it. It means the whole point is it doesn't matter. So what comes up to you and, oh, how much I appreciate you and how, you do things so nicely and everything, you do is great. What's coming up after that? What's coming next? Some economics, right? Okay, what is it? I need you to do this, right? Right? That's economics, that's artha.
Think about the Vedas, you ask favors only you make favors out of fear or to get something after.
Yeah. So then, like that, it says, this is economics, everything is economics. So that's the point, but if it's connected with the Vedas, the mercenary side is dropped. The modern, what it does is it's mercenary, but they don't have the Vedic culture to refine it and soften it.
Mercenary means
that you're working for money. Technically, a mercenary means a man who goes out. He's a soldier who fights as a business. I go work, I'll go fight for you. You pay me money. Like that. So in English, the term mercenary is applied to show the kind of more self-centered side of the economics. So it's kind of a derogatory. It's kind of shows the stark side of it, because that point may have been mercenary in its person. The one member of the community wanted something from the other. So because of that, then they are using that approach, right? But then you go on top of that, because they may be a family member and all that, you care for them, you want this to be done, and that thing that's being done is actually for their benefit, though you're the one that needs to get it done, you need the other one to help. So there's all these layers. So that's the whole point, is the Vedic then softens all these things because of the relationships. So it's the wife's duty to get these things done, the husband's duty to do these things, and they need some involvement, so they may take help from the other. So it's not actually mercenary. But ultimately, you can keep cutting down, but they're only in that relationship to get what they want out of it. That's why they've joined it, So the Vedic, when you're looking at it from the point of wanting to detach yourself from the material world, will remove the pleasantries and show the starkness, right? Like that, like that. So that's engaging the path of jnana. That's jnana yoga, right? Like that. The karma yoga is you cover it again with the Vedic or the social and the moralistic and elements of the culture, so that the mind is not looking at that, it's looking at, I'm taking the attachment and engaging it. The other one is how to break the attachment, the other one is how to engage the attachment. Jnana yoga is how to break the attachment, karma yoga is how to engage the attachment.
Karma yoga, yeah.
It means I'm attached in this way, so I take my attachment, use it in Krishna's service. Or jnana yoga is I'm attached, well, let's look at it and just dismantle it. Break it down and analyze it and see, hey, this doesn't really add up. So that's the Buddha yoga means you combine the two. You perform your activity, so you're engaging your attachment, but with knowledge. Because just because you have the knowledge doesn't mean the habit of attachment goes away immediately. Right? It takes some time. It takes practice for it to go away. So while you are practicing, so generally what happens is devotees will either throw it all out and try to not engage their attachments at all, and then with time, if they're successful, great, but if they're not, then they go back to their attachment, then they throw out the knowledge and say that didn't work and just engage themselves fully in their kind of like fruitive activity. But Buddha yoga means you see, analyze, what are my attachments? Which ones by just thinking about, like, I never thought about that, and then it goes, that's stupid, and then you just drop it, great. But those things, I never thought about it, I think about it, or I have thought about it, they're not going away any too quickly. So I make a plan. So that's the karma yoga. I engage that in Krishna's service. But in knowledge, I know it's useless, but I have the habit, so let's go through it. And because of the karma, I will do it right. Right? In other words, being married is not very important, right? But I have attachment to be married, so therefore I get married. Since I'm getting married, I will not now, understanding is useless, that's the karma aspect. So that part I keep. But the karma, I mean the jnana aspect. But the jnana aspect of therefore I don't work, that's rejected in the system of Buddha Yoga. Understand? The karmis have activity, act on attachment, without knowledge. The jnanis have knowledge, but no activity. So we reject the lack of knowledge of the karmis and the lack of activity of the jnanis. And we keep the activity of the karmi and the knowledge of the jnani. Does that make sense? So that's then, and that you do connected to Krishna, that's Buddha Yoga. So, therefore, since I'm being married, I know it's useless, but because I've taken it up to realize that it's useless, because I know it's useless, I don't realize it. Therefore, I will perform these duties fully with full focus. You know, not compromising my Krishna consciousness, but full focus. Then I will actually see what it is, and then I will see. Because I was doing materialistic activities before I take up Krishna consciousness. Shastra says it's useless, I say it's useless, but before I thought it was great. So therefore now in comparison with Krishna consciousness, I see, yes, the spiritual activities and that's getting there, the experience of that is so much greater than even the best emotional exchange between family members. Right? But how am I going to get that unless I'm doing it properly? Right? So that's what happens, is they devotees think they're being Vedic by ignoring their family members. But they're not being Vedic. Vedic means how to interact. Right? So they're married, but they ignore them. So what ashram is that? You know? It doesn't fit into the Varna. So what is it? It's a Western concept. In other words, it's a Western concept contaminated by gyan. I know it's useless, therefore I don't engage in it. But then why do you get married? Because that's the karma aspect. So why don't you do it?
And be rough.
Yeah, so it's the Westerners have developed their own unique concept of culture. Right? But according to Mahatma Gandhi, when someone asked him about, after he went to London and came back, they said, asked him, what do you think of Western culture? And he looked at the person and said, that would be a good idea. So, that's the problem. So, everybody ignores everybody else at the same time as all the issues are all over actually Varnashra, things that are covered by Varnashra. Right? All the different social issues are all because people demand the freedom to follow the modern and it's the best, but it doesn't give the result. And the solution is following according to the scriptures. But because that would be Maya, we don't, right? It would be Maya if I interacted with my family members and actually experienced some emotion. That would be Maya. Right? But the point is if it's according to the scriptures, it's Maya, but it's dovetailed. Otherwise, then how can you prove that anything in your house or even having a house is not Maya? Or even being married is not Maya. Being in the material world is Maya. Having a gross material body is Maya. You know? So, this is the impersonal concept. If it tastes good, if I have a nice time at prasad, it's Maya. So therefore I just come, eat quickly and get up and go. If I had a conversation with anybody that was pleasant and nice, that would be Maya. You know what I'm saying?
Nice sunset.
Yeah. You know, so it's a balance, but one has to get it right. Otherwise, one goes too far into it, and then one gets distracted by the emotional and sensual contact. Yeah. Or one becomes distracted by so-called, you know, being properly engaged in devotional service. you know, like that. Does that make some sense?
You're saying that we have to see Krishna behind these activities.
Yeah, you have to see. In other words, why is it Krishna says, why is there the rule that the husband should be giving the protection to the wife? Why? Is that because, according to modern, you know, feminist theory, is all the men of the world at some point, and still today, secretly get together and have a meeting that this is the common thing of how they're going to exploit the women, right? That means that the women, actually, feminists are extremely respectful towards men in that they give them the credit for having that much brains to have organized and have been able for the last, since recorded history or even before, to keep themselves on top of the women. So indirectly, they're praising the men, just like Shishupal, all those things. He was actually praising Krishna. So it's actually a great praise to think that the men have actually organized, orchestrated this the whole time. Yeah. So it's like that. But it's there because that's the way Krishna set it up. So if you do that because this is my duty, because Krishna said, right, then it becomes connected. If it's I do my duty because this is the Vedic thing, that's pious. And anyway, even if he's not Vedic, even the normal, you know, nasty, meanest karmi, he still is going to do the same thing. Right? That's the thing. Macho means I'm the tough guy, I take care, I protect, I this and that.
Provide,
yeah. So it's going to happen anyway. But one, you think I'm modern, it's just the way it is. The other is that, oh, it's Vedic. And the other is that, no, Krishna gave it. That's the way, because that's the way Nanda Baba, he runs the kingdom. He provides, he protects the citizens, takes care of Mother Yashoda, takes care of Krishna and Balaram. You know, like that. That's the way God made it. So that's why the reflection here is supposed to look like there. Because then you do it to Krishna. There, Nanda Baba is doing it to please Krishna, right? Because here, he has a son. He wants to please his son. So therefore, to do that, he has to provide the facility for his wife to take care of his son and the facility that the son has. So his attachment to his son, who happens to be Krishna, is all done to please him, right? So therefore, the perverted reflection is, in the material world, the father provides a facility for the wife and son so that the nice interaction can go on, because that's what you're supposed to do with a wife and a son. The perversion is that son is not Krishna. Of course, if you go to some communities, they will say their child is God and everything, and everything like this. So, whatever, but that's the point. It's not. It's a perversion. So, but the form of it's still supposed to work the same way. Now the point is you alter that by changing the conscious. The form of the activity doesn't change. It's, I do this not because the son is Krishna. I do this because this is the way Krishna wants me to deal with the son. So it becomes reversed. But it's still connected with Krishna. Does that make some sense? Last point, because I
One thing you speak a little bit about the concepts of
bhakti pratikul and what is favorable to devotional service, what's unfavorable. Favorable to devotional service means what is pleasing to Krishna, unfavorably means what's not. So therefore, then this would fall into five categories. What directly pleases Krishna, that's the best. That's in the first category. What is used directly, what itself, it does not directly please Krishna, but is engaged directly in an activity that pleases Krishna, that's the second level. Does that make sense? Third level is what is neutral. It itself is not Krishna devotional service, like taking your bath. It itself is not devotional service. It's cleanliness, it's, you know, all these different niceties. But it will therefore be engaged in your deity worship and in your association of devotees. Therefore, it becomes useful. Right? Does that make sense? That's the third level. Fourth level, now the fourth and fifth means what's unfavorable. Right? So you have directly favorable secondary favorable, and indirectly favorable, right, for your first three. Then the fourth and fifth are unfavorable.
Avoiding the unfavorable.
Yeah, well, that's there, but the fourth is, this is just in the activity itself. The fourth is those activities, though they may be okay, they may be supported by the Vedas, but they are unfavorable for the particular type of God realization you wish to attain. Right? And the fifth label is, and what Prabhuji mentioned, is activities that are improper against the Vedic scriptures. You know? Does that make sense? Is that okay? The fourth. Fourth stage would be just like rasabhas and those things like that. The gopi goes, all glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and then she embraces him. That's not favorable for her rasa. Does that make sense? You know, so there's certain things, they're not favorable. Like that. In other words, you can't really engage them properly in our line. It just wouldn't be done. You know, so many of the Vaikuntha rules, you know, Dwarka Dhyanam, Rukmini Dhyanam, use of the Kusa rings, all these different things like that. Those are favorable for Vaikuntha worship, but they're not for Vrindavan worship. So even though they're bona fide, we don't follow. You know, or let's say for the Sri Vaishnavas, they will not in any way have any dealings with any demigod. Right? But the Madhvas will respect them because they see that they are simply the representatives of the Lord's potencies. So actually, they're representing different aspects of God. So for them, it's neutral, the Madhvas. But for the Shris, it's unfavorable. It's in the fourth category. Does that make sense? So like that, depending upon what the Acharya has given, then different things will be in the different categories, right? That's why it's so important that it's got to be Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So according to how Guru and Sadhu gives the Shastra, that's for us. Because it may be okay for someone else, but it's not for us. You know what I'm saying? Others may do it, that's fine. It works for them because they have a different purpose. For us, it may not work. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaurav Devanandini.